Thanks, Yun Chen. It's really good to be back at PI. And as Yun Chen said, I'm going to talk about our efforts to understand the interplay of disorder and interactions in quantum critical systems. So this talk is going to be primarily based on three papers, mostly this top one here, which is a couple months old. But I'll also be referencing two earlier works, particularly in the second half of the talk. With all these collaborators that too many to list off. All right, so many of us in condensed matter, most of us are familiar with the lore that there are no metals in two dimensions at zero temperature. And the inspiration for this lore is the scaling theory of localization, which tells us that if I have a free electron system in two dimensions in the presence of quench disorder, that I can't have a metallic ground state. I will always have a localized Anderson insulator. And really, weak interactions at least don't modify this conclusion very much. However, experiments appear to horribly defy this conclusion. We see a lot of metallic phases, which or things that would look like phases that occur at very, very low temperatures in a wide variety of systems, many of which you guys might be familiar with. So one very classic example that we often don't realize is an anomalous metal, but it is the Hatfield-Landau level, which is metallic, if you want, composite Fermi liquid state that appears in quantum Hall systems at even denominator filling. Anomalous metals also occur intervening between superconductor insulator transitions and thin films, also in silicon MOSFETs as carrier density is tuned, in a wide variety of other systems. Recently, anomalous metallic states have been seen in intervening between quantum spin Hall and insulating states, which is very interesting. So this plot here is just a plot for the superconducting thin film indium oxide, and we see that so each of these curves corresponds to a different magnetic field, and that going down to very, very low temperatures, you see resistivity saturating. So one very interesting feature of a lot of anomalous metallic states is that they seem to always want to occur, or not always, but a large fraction of the time, occur near quantum phase transitions, which themselves are very mysterious. So this is a theoretical phase diagram, which is valid in particular for the field-tuned superconductor insulator transition and the integer quantum Hall transition. So the particular examples of thin films that I discussed a moment ago were the Hatfield-Landau level. And at very, very strong disorder, you see a what looks like a continuous quantum phase transition. And at weaker disorder, you see the anomalous metallic state intervening between either superconductor here or integer quantum Hall and a trivial insulating state. And these quantum critical points that are seen at stronger disorder are themselves, as I said, very mysterious. They exhibit weird exponents. So in both the field-tuned superconductor insulator transition and in the plateau transition, we see a dynamical scaling exponent of z is approximately 1, and correlation length exponent nu is approximately 7/3. No model with just disorder interactions can really capture both of these at once. And in addition to these mysterious exponents, we also see other weird phenomena. So in the case of the quantum Hall system, every plateau transition that we know also has these types of weird exponents, the exact same ones. And we refer to this phenomenon as super universality. There seems to be some sharing of information between seemingly very different quantum phase transitions. And it's additionally mysterious that this sort of super universality is also shared by the superconductor insulator example. We also see very mysterious universal transport features. So this phase transition here is characterized by universal conductivity, and that conductivity is generally given by a value which reflects a sort of funny type of emergent symmetry that we can't explain. So in the field-tuned superconductor insulator, this is referred to as self-duality. So you see universal resistivity of h over 4e squared. And in the quantum Hall case, you see h over e squared. So this is what these plots are showing, is this universal resistivity in the superconductor insulator transition example, again, here in indium oxide. And you can see the emergence of the funny symmetry, particularly in this plot here. So self-duality can be sort of understood as a charge flux duality. And this is a plot here in the quantum Hall case going across the integer quantum Hall to insulator transition of several current voltage curves as you cross the transition. This sort of thicker dashed line here is the transition. Stronger magnetic fields are the insulator. These solid lines, these dashed lines are the quantum Hall state. And you see that the roles of current and voltage are exchanging across the transition, which has this universal value of the resistivity. So importantly, none of this phenomena can really be explained with interactions or disorder alone. And this seems to reflect then a deep interplay between disorder, the strong interactions in these problems, and also quantum critical behavior. So there are sort of two paths that we can use to try to attack these types of problems. The first one is maybe to try to target the anomalous metal itself. But this is very, very hard. If I hand you a theory of a Fermi surface and with any type of interactions and add disorder, the disorder always wants to introduce a finite scattering rate, which becomes a very relevant scale in the problem and leads to diffusive behavior. And this diffusive behavior is always then unstable to localization effects due to the disorder. And so in general, studying this problem is very, very hard. Often you see flows to strong interactions and strong disorder. Instead, however, we can target the quantum critical regime. And this is actually much more tractable because the scale invariance of the quantum critical point precludes all of this annoying localization physics, essentially because all length scales are diverging at the quantum critical point, and so there's no localization automatically. So in this talk, we're going to largely focus on theories which are scale invariant, so quantum critical points, and also incompressible. And what happens then for a free incompressible theory? So non-interacting theories are going to, at least with time reversal invariant disorder, are going to flow to strong disorder and often diffusive fixed point, where we describe diffusion with a dynamical exponent z equals 2. This just reflects that diffusive fluctuations have quadratic dispersion. And also the density of states, which start out at 0, is now becoming finite. And in this talk, we're going to be asking what other types of behavior is possible. So if I turn on interactions, often I can flow to an interesting different type of quantum critical point, which is interacting. And I can instead ask the question, OK, what happens if I add disorder to this quantum critical point? And the goal of this talk, then, is going to be to try to understand this physics, in particular, if I can have some interesting type of dirty quantum critical point in this plane up here. And we're going to try to search for theories where studying the interplay of interactions and disorder is actually tractable. Hopefully along the way, we also will develop new organizing principles for understanding dirty quantum criticality. So we're going to find two major effects that can occur in dirty interacting quantum critical systems. First is that interactions can screen out the disorder and stabilize quantum critical or metallic behavior. And second, that in cases where disorder is destabilizing the interacting theory, that the interplay of disorder and interactions can kind of cancel each other out and lead to new interesting types of fixed points, which in particular often characterized by a sort of failed diffusive behavior. So remember I told you that diffusion is related to dynamical exponent z equals 2. But I can have z actually usually less than 2, or sometimes even greater than 2, leading to diverging or vanishing density of states. And unfortunately, though, we still don't get z equals 1. So this very, very important dynamical scaling exponent that seems to be present in both the superconductor insulator transition and the quantum Hall plateau transition.
Experimentally, how do we know z equals 1?
So normally, you can do this by studying nonlinear response.
Okay.
So you can look at scaling in the electric field and the magnetic field. Unfortunately, a lot of the times, especially in the superconductor insulator case, what we see is that people will just assume that Z equals one, which is really bad. So some of the sort of scaling results that people have are
better with plateau transition, or
In the quantum Hall case, it's better in the sense that I generally always know of data where people do this and see Z equals one. Because the zoology in the superconductor insulator case is much wider, so there's not only the field tuned case, there's disorder tuned case, different types of materials. People even see exponents that are not the sort of super universal quantum Hall ones. And so there's some question about sort of, every sort of normal metal is the same, but each anomalous metal might be anomalous in its own way. Okay, so in this talk, we're going to develop two major examples of theories which post quantum critical states with both disorder and interactions. The first are going to be in bosonic systems, namely near the Wilson-Fisher fixed point. And the second are going to be in systems with Dirac fermions coupled to gauge fields in QED3. And to access these fixed points, we're going to employ both perturbative RG methods and also discuss some intuition that we get from duality, although I'm not going to have very much time to discuss the duality results in detail. All right, so first we'll start with the bosonic case. So the simplest interacting theory that we can write down is a system of relativistic bosons with phi-4 interactions. And this is a quantum critical point describing a zero temperature superfluid insulator transition. And we're going to model disorder, or random impurities here, as a quenched random variable, R, which depends only on space, and which is going to couple to the mass operator. In this theory, this type of disorder is always allowed by symmetry. And this random variable R is going to live on a probability distribution, which is Gaussian. It's going to have moments, which are this delta function, and it's going to vanish on average alone. And this problem is actually historically considered very, very hard. And the reason for this is that for free bosons, in any reasonable space-time dimension, this disorder is actually very, very relevant. So the reason for this can be seen is from the following simple scaling analysis. So for free bosons, masses are dimension 2, which means that from this expression, the dimension of delta is going to be 4 minus little d, or d is coming from this delta function. Little d is the spatial dimension, by the way. And so what this then means is that the theory is stable if the number of spatial dimensions is bigger than 4. Since we don't have any condensed matter systems which are bigger than 4 dimensions, means that this is fairly unphysical. And this is the manifestation of the Harris criterion for free bosons. However, we know that in spatial dimensions below 3, relativistic bosons are always unstable to phi-4 interactions and flow to Wilson-Fisher. And so maybe even though there's this mismatch of upper critical dimensions, you can see some interesting interplay and get some control over the theory. So this problem is actually very, very physically relevant. It applies to a wide variety of systems. Historically, helium-4 absorbed in a sponge was one of the first examples that people studied. Also is a natural model for dirty Josephson junction arrays, which also happen to exhibit anomalous metallic states. People have tried studying this problem in cold atoms, also a variety of other things. And people have studied this problem as a result of this for a long time and have predicted even interesting glassy behavior sort of intervening between the usual mod insulating and superfluid states referred to as Bose glass. I'm not going to discuss this in too much detail in this talk.
Sharp transition between the usually phase to the phase.
So the idea is that if I see a second order phase transition out of the insulating phase, then it's going to go to the glass phase. But it actually took a long time for people to argue that there's no direct transition between these two states. So the intuition was roughly that, say, I'm starting from the superfluid and I go towards the insulating state, that eventually I'm going to find the bosonic excitation settling into different potential minima and feeling Anderson localization, but not the usual mod-insulating behavior. And that's what roughly describes this state. Put differently, if I start from the mod-insulating phase, I go towards the superfluid, there's going to be sort of an arrested condensation that comes from settling into these different potential minima. So yeah, both of these are thought to be second order phase transition.
Is there physical observables that are distinct glass phase?
Yeah, so the one that's often referenced is compressibility. So at least away from particle Wohl symmetry, the Bose glass is going to be a compressible state. However, along, so this axis here is describing chemical potential, this axis here is describing the coupling in the XY model for the mass. And if I am sitting at the point of particle Wohl symmetry, which is in the middle here, and I go out, this region here is also glassy, but is believed to be a different phase, which is called the Mott glass. And that one is characterized by vanishing compressibility. And in that sense, you can't use compressibility as your order parameter anymore. In that situation, you have to look at other correlation functions. So in, as I already said, actually, the models that we study here are even relevant to a lot of these systems that display anomalous metallic behavior. In particular, these dirty Josephson junction arrays, because that's essentially literally a dirty XY model. So how do we try to attack this problem? Now, in the clean limit, we, as I already said, we floated the Wilson-Fisher fixed point. But how do we handle disorder? So the original approach to this problem was to try to handle the mismatch in upper critical dimensions between the disorder and interactions by performing a double epsilon expansion, where one of the epsilons corresponds to the number of space dimensions, and one of the epsilons corresponds to the number of time dimensions. And what this amounts to physically is an expansion about the Gaussian or free classical fixed point. By classical, I mean finite temperature. So the disorder is no longer quenched in the sense that there's no difference between space and time anymore. And so what do we see? We see this. So these spiraling RG flows are fairly concerning looking for condensed matter physicists. What they essentially mean is that while there's this fixed point here, it's taking me a very, very long time to get to this fixed point. And so in an experiment, you might not actually expect to see universal behavior. And yet in experiment in numerics, we see universal behavior, namely correlation length exponent close to 1 and a dynamical scaling exponent close to 1.5 is for the particle Wohl symmetric case. Although the particle Wohl broken case is also pretty close to this. And additionally concerning is that these spiraling RG flows are coming from non-unitary behavior in the theory, but the theory that we're studying is essentially an average over a bunch of unitary theories. So that that's worrisome.
Sorry, that exponent you quoted, was that?
Yeah.
That's from
this is from, this is a numerical calculation.
Numerical calculation from double epsilon expansion?
Not from double, so this is from Monte Carlo for just the regular XY problem.
Okay.
Yeah, in two dimensions.
So if I try to blindly extract some exponents of this, does it make any sense, or?
Okay, that's a really good question. The answer is that I can massage these exponents out of here.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is that if I choose how I do my expansion for the exponents and the scaling dimensions properly, I can reproduce this nu and z. But in particular, nu is very funny. So when I study the exponents here, I can either linearize nu, or I can linearize the dimension of the mass operator. And if I linearize, I believe if it's in the dimension of the mass operator, nu is just bonkers. Actually, if you look at, so in Subir's book, he quotes the expression for nu, and if you plug in numbers for that, you get a totally insane answer. I think it's even negative. If instead you linearize nu, which is sort of a non-standard thing when we're doing RG, then you can get a nu that's close to one. So yeah, this is not very satisfactory. It's kind of, I expect that this expansion is sort of uncontrolled. Okay, so as I already said, this appears to be a consequence of perturbing the free classical fixed point, where we can sort of more technically describe what's going on as being due to an operator degeneracy here. So if I'm close to this fixed point, there's an operator associated with the disorder and an operator for the Phi-4 interactions, and they have the same scaling dimensions, essentially due to the fact that they're, I'm expanding about zero time dimensions. And when I run the RG, then these operators can mix into the complex plane sort of prematurely. And so the disorder can essentially arrest the RG flow. And this is actually very similar to what happens in the CPN model in large N. There's this old story about smectic crystals and the superconductor insulator transition in those systems, where in experiment we saw a second order transition, in numerics we saw a second order transition, but when we did an epsilon expansion, Halpern, Lebensky, and Ma, was found that you could only get a second order phase transition if the number of bosons in the problem was bigger than 182. And this is not in agreement with experiment or numerics, and it comes from the fact that when they did their epsilon expansion, they were expanding about a fixed point with operator degeneracy. And so the same type of physics is what's happening here. So the question that we're going to ask in this part of the talk is, what happens if we perturb the Wilson-Fisher fixed point fully in 2 plus 1 dimensions instead of perturbing this Gaussian fixed point? And the answer is we get something very nice. So we get just direct RG flows to a new disorder interacting fixed point. And both these sort of screening and anomalous dimension interplay effects that I mentioned at the beginning of the talk are going to play an important role in realizing this quantum critical state. So going into a little more detail, we can ask how the presence of anomalous dimensions at the Wilson-Fisher fixed point affects the scaling analysis that we did a few slides ago. So as I already said, at t equals 0, relativistic bosons are always going to be strongly interacting and flow to a Wilson-Fisher fixed point with anomalous dimension for the mass operator that's greater than 0. So if I have this Gaussian white noise disorder again for the mass operator, I have that the dimension of the disorder variance, which again is characterizing the strength of the disorder, is going to be corrected by this anomalous dimension. And so we get that the fixed point is stable if the number of spatial dimensions is bigger than 4 minus a number that's determined by this anomalous dimension. And for a single complex boson, this eta is close to 1/2. So this means that we still have instability to disorder in 2 plus 1d. But for very, very large n, a miracle happens. In the limit as n goes to infinity, eta goes to 1. So this means then that in two spatial dimensions, I get that disorder is going to be marginal. And so in what follows, it's going to be useful to think of the role that the disorder is playing as affecting the disorder correlation. So instead of having myself fixed at this delta function, imagine that the disorder correlations are some power law given by this power chi naught. And we'll say that for Gaussian white noise disorder, chi naught is approaching the number of spatial dimensions. There's a factor here which depends on some gamma functions, which fixes up this limit. For free theory, the theory is going to be stable if chi naught is bigger than 4. That's just a repackaging of the statement that we made earlier that about the stability of the theory to Gaussian white noise disorder above 4 spatial dimensions. And at Wilson-Fisher, we can think of the anomalous dimension as correcting chi to an interacting value, which is determined by chi naught and this anomalous dimension. So the stability criterion given in terms of chi is now that chi int is bigger than 4 minus 2 eta phi squared. So our strategy then is going to be to flow first to the Wilson-Fisher fixed point and then perturb by disorder. First, we're taking the large n limit, and then we're adding disorder as marginal perturbations to this fixed point, just doing RG. So the model that we're considering more explicitly is given here. So I've Hubbard-Stratonovich'd the phi fourth operator and written the theory in terms of phi and a new field sigma, which models the mass operator. And disorder, which was formally coupling to phi squared, you can show can equivalently couple to sigma. And this theory has the following global symmetries, usual charge conservation, time reversal, particle hole parity, and also a U of n flavor symmetry. Again, because these are complex bosons, n equals 1 here is going to correspond to the 2D quantum XY model. And taken together, this means that the full global symmetry is O of 2n. That's why this is often referred to as the O of 2n model. And I can equivalently trade this for a theory of 2n real bosons. And if you want, I can continue n to be half integers to get the real boson cases for odd numbers. So how do I take this large n limit? If I take n to infinity holding u fixed, this sums bubble diagrams. That's where probably mostly all familiar. This is just RPA. And if I take the IR limit, which is the same as saying that u goes to infinity, I get now a screened propagator for sigma, which is now linear in momentum. And this means that the dimension of the phi squared operator is being corrected to 2. And I can write a beta function for the interactions in terms of this dimensionless coupling here as this very simple expression. And the Wilson-Fisher fixed point then just corresponds to u star equals 1. So to look at the effects of disorder about this fixed point, we're going to use what's called the replica trick. So normally, when we're interested in disorder, we're interested in the disorder average free energy, not just the regular partition function. And this is normally very, very hard to study. It's this annoying looking path integral here. This is the probability distribution for the Gaussian white noise disorder. And the reason why this is painful is we have to deal with this log. And one of the sort of most canonical ways of dealing with the log is by using what's known as the replica trick, which is just this calculus fact that log z is the same as the limit as n goes to 0 of n copies of the theory minus 1 over n. And this is a sort of an unholy limit, because the limit as n copies of the theory goes to zero sounds very, very weird. In any case, we're going to take it anyway, and not really, there are a lot of questions about the validity of the replica trick in quantum field theory. I'm not going to grapple with any of those. So now that I have replaced the theory with little n sub r copies and eliminated this log, you can do the Gaussian integral over r, and this leads to a non-local interaction in imaginary time for the operator coupled to disorder. So how is disorder impacted by interactions in the large n limit? So it's going to be affected by the same screening bubbles that impacted the phi-4 interactions, or in this case, the sigma propagator. In this language, the sigma propagator. And if I just look at the potential mediated by disorder, so this diamond is a disorder insertion. These shaded bubbles are just the bubble sums. You find that this potential goes like 1 over x to the fourth. And this is screened with respect to the usual Gaussian white noise, which would have been 1 over x squared. And this means that chi int, this thing we introduced before, has been corrected to 4, meaning that disorder is now effectively short range. This is a manifestation of this anomalous dimension effect as n goes to infinity. So in the limit as n goes to infinity, disorder is actually exactly marginal. There's nothing else other than these bubble diagrams. But what about 1 over n corrections? So the leading correction to the anomalous dimension, clean Wilson-Fisher, is probably negative. I told you that for n equals 2, that eta phi squared is 1/2, roughly. So we should expect that corrections will be negative at leading order. And this is going to make the disorder more relevant. So this sort of leads then to the question of, can this negative correction, which is making disorder more relevant, be balanced by additional quantum corrections and lead to a new fixed point? So this would correspond to a beta function that looks something like this. And as long as this constant C, which is coming from the quantum corrections due to disorder itself, as long as this is less than 0, because delta eta phi squared here, this correction is negative, you get a fixed point. And this is exactly what we find. So you can either use momentum shell RG, which is what's in the main text of the paper, or dimreg to compute the running of delta. So there's some interesting simplification in this theory that lets you just study it at one loop, even though the order 1 over n corrections include two loop diagrams. And what we find is two RG equations, first for this dynamical scaling exponent, which is reflecting the slowing down of the bosons due to disorder. You can also view this as a running velocity. And this beta function for the disorder given here, where indeed we see that C there was negative. And so what's left then is a fixed point way up here with very germane RG flows. And so this is a very big triumph. We actually now have a reasonably good understanding of disorder, at least at the particle hole symmetric superfluid insulator transition. I should note that actually a very similar approach was taken the year I was born by Youngbek Kim and Zhaogang Wen, when Youngbek was a graduate student, and they found runaway flows, but there was actually an issue with their calculation. It seems like they redundantly summed some diagrams, and if you don't redundantly sum those diagrams, you recover a fixed point.
Is it concerning at all that delta star ended up being of order 1?
No, so the reason why delta star is order 1 is because there's this 1 over n accompanying everything here. So in the n goes to infinity limit, the disorder is actually exactly marginal, because I add the disorder and there's nothing that it can do. And so that's why you can get delta star as order one, but the calculation is still controlled. All the subleading corrections will be order one of n.
Well, you're saying the angular infinity fixed point disorder is exactly marginal.
Yeah.
Is that easy to see?
That's coming from the fact that the only diagrams that I've summed are these bubbles. And so the disorder potential is exactly this. There's no other quantum corrections at n equals infinity. Yeah, it's a bit weird. It's this also is related to the fact that we've been hiding a factor of 1 over n on this vertex. Okay, so the additionally triumphant thing is that we can explain these exponents that are seen in numerics that I mentioned. So we get that nu is exactly 1 at order 1 over n. This is coming from the balancing of disorder and interaction effects. Essentially, the correction to nu, Wilson-Fisher, is coming from this anomalous dimension effect, but that's being balanced by the disorder here. Put differently, 1 is the mean field exponent for Wilson-Fisher, and the cancellation of fluctuations means that that's preserved. Additionally, when I continue n to 2, z is approximately 1.5. And you can think about the fact that z is between 1 and 2 as reflecting the fact that the compressibility is still vanishing. So we're still in a very similar quantum critical state to the one that we started with. And again, this is great. We agree with numerics. And in addition to this, we can ask what happens if we try to calculate transport. We expect a universal sigma xx of the transition, but actually calculating this as a function of temperature and frequency is fairly prohibitively difficult, and so this is ongoing work. Okay, so as one last set of statements about this problem. Imagine that I now break more symmetries of the disorder. So I add a random scalar potential and a random vector potential. And this guy is going to break particle hole. This guy is going to break time reversal. What happens here actually can be understood non-perturbatively. So current conservation tells me that in the presence of a dynamical exponent bigger than 1, which always happens when I add disorder, any fluctuations are going to induce this, that the dimension of the JT, the temporal component of the current density, is going to remain 2, whereas the spatial components are going to be corrected by z. And so this means that these guys are going to stay marginal, but this guy is actually going to become relevant. And so if I turn on this random scalar potential, my original fixed point is unstable, and I flow to some strong disorder regime, which might be some kind of interesting glassy state. It might be this Bose glass that I mentioned that Sungsek asked about earlier in the talk. But it really takes understanding non-perturbative effects to really characterize this phase. Okay, so what have we learned? We started with an interacting fixed point, Wilson-Fisher, and we're able to perturb it in disorder with and study the interplay of disorder interactions in a controlled way, leading to a new interesting quantum critical point with exponents that are consistent with numerics. And this represents really important progress on what's now a greater than 30-year-old problem. And we also saw two major effects. First, that interactions were screened by the disorder en route to Wilson-Fisher by these bubble diagrams. And also that fluctuations about the fixed point, while destabilizing it, ended up giving rise to new quantum critical behavior. And additionally, we have some physical intuition about these exponents. Nu equals 1 is coming from the balancing of disorder and interactions. And z between 1 and 2 is representing, again, the vanishing of compressibility here, and is not the usual z equals 2 that I mentioned is very common for quantum critical theories with disorder. And this is physically relevant to all kinds of physical settings, many of which have anomalous metals. Okay, so now I'm going to talk about significantly older work and move from talking about bosons to talking about fermions and a new type of interaction, namely interactions with a fluctuating gauge field. Okay, so in particular, I'm going to be thinking about incompressible phases of fermions. So Dirac fermions at neutrality, not thinking about Fermi surfaces. And the sort of standard example that we all know of is graphene with Coulomb interactions. So when I add disorder to this problem, if I add all types of disorder which are consistent with time reversal invariance, the theory is unstable, and I flow to a diffusive fixed point and ultimately localization. And if I just add random chemical potential, what you find is an unstable fixed line of disorder and Coulomb stress. There's no stable, stable phase. Now, if I additionally preserve the valley symmetry of this graphene-like model, what you end up finding is a very non-trivial strong disorder fixed point, which is z equals 2, but that ends up being outside of perturbative reach. This is a very interesting fixed point to try to understand, but I don't have time to really do justice to it in this talk. It's very physically relevant to this plateau transition problem. Now, the main question that we're going to be asking in this last part of the talk is whether this fate is truly inevitable and whether strong interactions can alter this conclusion. So just briefly, again, more scaling. We want to understand disorder in this theory. All the types of disorder that we're going to be interested in are going to be like masses or scalar or vector potentials. And for the fermions, these all have dimension 1. So we get that for these Gaussian white noise correlations, the theory is stable if this chi naught, again characterizing the width of the disorder correlations, is bigger than 2, or in the Gaussian white noise case, the d is bigger than 2. This is the Harris criterion for free fermions, free Dirac fermions. And the effect of interactions is to, again, modify chi naught by some number, which we will suggestively again refer to as eta. So what new ingredients do we need to generate an eta, which gives me interesting physics? So natural suspects are going to be emergent gauge fields. These are going to play important roles in many of the physical contexts that I mentioned at the beginning of the talk. There's an emergent gauge field in the Hatfield-Landau level example mediating flux attachment. There's also composite fermion flux attached proposals for theories of the field-tuned superconductor inslayer transition. Is also relevant to quantum phase transitions in spin liquids. So while this gauge field, which we'll take to be a 2D gauge field fluctuating, it's not electromagnetism, is sort of not the standard thing we might be used to. It's still very physically relevant. So we're going to consider a simple model, which is just QED3. I have 2N Dirac fermions coupled to this emergent U1 gauge field in 3 Euclidean space-time dimensions, and it has the usual global symmetries because I have an even number of Diracs, so I have particle hole, time reversal, parity, and also the SU2N flavor symmetry and charge conservation. This theory is going to describe a phase. There aren't mass operators in this theory that are consistent with symmetries. You can't add a mass operator for the gauge field, and you also can't add one for the fermions consistent with time reversal invariance or the flavor symmetry. And I already mentioned the contrast with Coulomb. So I'm again going to try to approach this theory by flowing to a large n fixed point and asking what happens there. So The large n limit corresponds again to summing bubble diagrams, which will screen the photon propagator in the same way that the sigma field was screened in the random Wilson-Fisher case. And this means that the fine structure constant here, which is the interaction strength, is going to run to a stable fixed point with this beta function here. And this fixed point is interacting in the sense that the psi field has an anomalous dimension. It's just order 1 over nf. Okay. So the large n QED3 fixed point is going to describe a quantum critical phase, as I've already said. There's no mass operator I can add that's consistent with symmetry. And now the goal is going to be, again, to introduce disorder. So our main interest is going to be in disorder which respects the time reversal symmetry, as I already hinted at a couple slides ago. So this is going to be scalar potentials, correspond to density and chemical potential. And we're going to see here that this leads to stable metallic quantum critical behavior, and also mass which preserves the time reversal symmetry but breaks the flavor symmetry. And to study disorder, we're again going to make use of this replica trick.
So when you say chemical potential, you mean the potential for the Dirac fermion?
Yes. Yeah. I'm going to get to the subtle difference here. This is why I say density and chemical potential, because it's the global current in the problem, but also the gauge current. And these have different physics here. Yeah. So natural place to start is going to be the random chemical potential, which couples to the fermions. And the replica trick is going to lead again to this non-local type of interaction. And just like in the bosonic case, we see screening in this example. So I can sum bubble diagrams, which correct the interaction mediated by the disorder. And this leads to a screening of this disorder potential and now short-range correlations for the disorder. In particular, a chi int now, which is corrected by 2. No, in the original paper, this was a 1, and there's a new round of reflecting this. We made a kind of dumb mistake with the combinatorics here. So what this means, though, is the same essential physical result, that QED3 is stable to a random chemical potential, which is in very stark contrast to the non-interacting case, where I mentioned you have these unstable fixed lines. If I don't have the Coulomb interactions, actually the theory is just unstable, flows to strong disorder. So as Chong alluded to, there's also another current operator lurking in the problem, which is the monopole current, or the vortex current. And I can imagine disorder now, which corresponds not to a random chemical potential, but a random density, which couples to this operator like a vector potential that couples to the electric field. We're rearranging this. It's like I have little a naught, which couples to this random density. And this is also going to break particle hole symmetry, but is consistent with time reversal. Now, from a few slides ago, we actually know what global currents do when I couple them to disorder. And because this is actually a vector potential, this corresponds to the spatial components of this current here, actually this type of disorder is exactly marginal and leads to a fixed line with a dynamical scaling exponent greater than 1. This still contrasts with the free case. I still have stable metallic quantum critical behavior, but now my QED3 fixed point has opened up to be a fixed line with varying dynamical scaling exponent. And the same type of interesting thing happens for free Dirac's with random flux. In that case, it's also a globally conserved current. Psi bar gamma mu psi is also a globally conserved current. And coupling a random flux to the spatial components of that leads to an exactly solvable fixed line, which is fairly famous. But the message of this slide is really that the vortices here are seeing electric impurities as magnetic. So I've added electric impurities to this problem, random charge density, but the gauge field here is viewing them as magnetic impurities, and that's why you get stable behavior rather than runaway flux.
So what about flavor currents?
So in the case of the flavor currents, you also get similar types of behavior. So if you couple to the, for example, temporal component of the flavor current, you will, I believe, also get instability. Actually, Alex studied this in detail in her paper. Yeah, if I couple to general flavor currents, the theory is unstable. Okay. So similarly, the vortices are going to view magnetic impurities as electric. So imagine that I have a scalar potential here, which couples to this magnetic field, which I can repackage as a random current. This will break time reversal, but is always going to be relevant. It's going to be non-perturbatively relevant. Just like the random chemical potential for free Dirac's that I mentioned, or the random chemical potential in the dirty boson story. And again, introducing the gauge field has roughly exchanged the roles of electric and magnetic impurities, which in the language of symmetry is like an exchange of particle hole and time reversal. So as one last thing we'll consider, now imagine that I have disorder which breaks the flavor symmetry, as Yin Chen was alluding to. So in particular, rather though than a flavor current, imagine that I couple to this time reversal invariant mass, which breaks the flavor symmetry down to SUN cross SUN, but preserves, again, time reversal. And in the clean theory, interactions are going to lead to a negative anomalous dimension for this operator. The regular time reversal, a breaking mass operator, gets an anomalous dimension of the opposite sign. And what this means then is that if I couple disorder to this guy, the QED3 fixed point is going to be unstable. It's starting to sound a lot like mass disorder at Wilson-Fisher. And actually, we know that in the non-interacting case, the theory with just disorder, that fluctuations lead to marginal irrelevancy for this type of disorder. And so this might lead us to expect that we get a theory with a fixed point where these effects compete. And now to study this, we actually didn't do the sort of two-stage RG of large N plus 1 over N corrections as marginal perturbations. That's what Alex did. For various reasons at the time, we thought it would be cool to use this epsilon expansion that we engineered, where we look near 3 spatial dimensions, but keep the disorder correlations fixed. So the disorder is long-ranged in 3 spatial dimensions. And this type of expansion is broadly applicable. It might be, in particular, applicable to problems of Fermi surfaces coupled to disorder. And this also carries the benefit that it might capture the small NF behavior fairly well. And the running couplings here are going to be the fine structure constant, the disorder variance, and the velocity, which is different from large N. In large N, you don't have this additional running velocity, but in this epsilon expansion, you do. So the RG equations that we get are these sort of more complicated looking things. But importantly, you see a fixed point here with finite disorder and interactions with dynamical scaling exponent, again, between 1 and 2, a finite value for disorder variance, finite interactions, and finite velocity. Now, what I will say is that if I additionally break particle hole symmetry, again, with, say, random currents, so if I add a random flux to this problem, or flavor flux, I should say, that this actually gives way to a fixed line. And so with the random, if I break particle hole between the random flux or random flavor flux and the random density I mentioned, you get a fixed plane. still interesting stable metallic quantum critical behavior, but Z is going to sort of vary along this manifold. So what are the interesting features of this fixed point? Again, Z is generally between 1 and 2. And this means that there's neither this sort of conventional diffusive behavior that the clean fixed point generally gives way to, or sorry, the non-interacting fixed point generally gives way to, but also it's not really a conventional ballistic regime either. And the density of states at zero temperature continues to vanish. Moreover, we expect a finite DC conductivity, thrown up a crude Drude estimate that we did up here. So the inelastic scattering rate is roughly linear in temperature. And from the scaling of the density of states, I can deduce the the carrier density, how it scales in temperature, and also the quote unquote effective mass. And you see that this should be a finite value. This is really just the statement that this is a critical state which is characterized by universal conductivity. Doing a precise calculation of all of this, though, requires computing the polarization tensor at finite frequency and temperature, which again is fairly hard, but we're now renewing our efforts to understand that problem. But importantly, this was the first major example of a dirty interacting quantum critical phase. So again, what have we learned here? Well, introducing the fluctuating gauge field has dramatically changed the physics of the Dirac plus disorder problem. And while time reversal invariant disorder has generically always led to a diffusive regime in these problems with finite density of states, this fate is arrested in QED3 and leads to new types of interesting quantum critical states. And the intuition that we got from particle vortex duality, roughly, I'm not actually didn't actually use duality, but used sort of the intuition associated with it, is that the gauge field has sort of exchanged the roles of electric and magnetic impurities. And that's really what enables the stability of this theory to time reversal invariant disorder. So to wrap up the talk, this general take-home messages, again, in QED3, we found new interesting 2D metallic phases with time reversal symmetry and sort of this failed diffusive behavior, with Z neither being 1 nor 2. And we also saw that Wilson-Fisher bosons with a random mass have very germane RG flows to a new dirty interacting quantum critical point with none of this confusing spiraling behavior that was seen in the 80s. And this has exponents which are in strong agreement with numerics. So what I didn't get to is some non-perturbative examples where you can use duality, as long as there's a dual free theory, to ask what happens to interacting theories in the presence of disorder. And this actually enables you, rather than sort of scratching our heads with rough Drude calculations, to really compute the exact conductivities because we know what the conductivity tensor is for the free theory with disorder. And so that was this paper. We also have discussion of duality in the boson paper. In particular, the fixed point that we found represents a new prediction for quantum critical behavior of Chern-Simons matter theories coupled to fermions with disorder. Okay, so future directions. It'd be really great to study Fermi surfaces coupled to disorder and also with fluctuating gauge fields or fluctuating order parameter. This is sadly still very, very hard, but there's some hope for progress saying using the type of funny epsilon expansion that I mentioned earlier. Additionally, it'd be great to better understand DC transport at these fixed points. This is something I'm working on with Sri Raghu and his student. and also to study non-perturbative effects, multifractality, and the physics of rare events, so essentially instantons in the dirty interacting theory. And also there's some interesting new experiments related to anomalous metals that there really isn't a good theoretical understanding of. In particular, this example that I mentioned in words at the very beginning of the quantum spin Hall insulator superconductor transition. I think I said insulator at the beginning. That was a not correct.
What did they see exactly? Does it do?
So they have a quantum spin Hall state, and instead of a direct transition to a superconductor, they see an intervening sort of finite metallic region.
Does it look anything different from usual normal insulator to superconductor intermediate?
That I think is to be understood. I think they were really interested in the superconductivity and didn't really talk a whole lot about the anomalous metallic physics. Just sort of, if you eyeball their plots, it's a clearly a finite metallic region. Another interesting, important future direction is to understand what happens with relevant disorder and try to characterize interacting theories with the same type of, I didn't really talk in detail about this, non-interacting theories with disorder generally are understood in the language of nonlinear sigma models when the disorder is strong, but this fails in interacting theories. And it's important to to sort of try to generalize this to the interacting problem, and we have some ideas for large N. Thanks. Yeah.
So I still don't understand, so why your like spiral object flow or your object time decrease when you start from the Wilson Fisher instead of the free fixed point? So why that depends on where you start?
So the reason for that, I can phrase this a couple of ways. The first is that here the correlation length exponent is sitting at 1. And what that essentially means is that these operators that were mixing near the Gaussian fixed point are no longer allowed to mix very close to the starting point, the RG. The other thing I can say, which I sort of swept under the rug, is that actually in this example, if I crank N really, really high, you see that these RG flows stiffen and that there's a crossover to this type of behavior. And that's in direct analogy with the CPN example. Essentially, when you do that, because nu is sort of getting closer and closer to 1 in that limit, you're lifting this degeneracy of operators along the RG flow.
So you mean that when n become larger, this will cross over to that one?
Yes. It's not clear whether, I can't prove that these are different fixed points, that this is some fixed point that's like very, very close to the Gaussian fixed point and that this one is the sort of genuine interacting one. There's the additional problem of this Gaussian fixed point is actually like the finite temperature fixed point, so it's not even quantum disorder when epsilon is 0. So that actually leads to me questioning the extent to which this fixed point is physical at all or whether this expansion is controlled. But there's a possible scenario, I guess, in which this fixed point and this fixed point are secretly the same.
So what's the last sentence?
There's a possible scenario in which sort of in the large N limit, this fixed point and this fixed point are the same, rather than capturing different physics, yeah.
So for the double expansion, how many loops did they go to?
I don't remember. It was at least 2. Yeah, I don't remember what they did.
They still see the spiral.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't. Those types of expansions have been done for quite a while, and I think people have gotten to fairly high orders with them. They still see this behavior. But yeah, I don't know what the maximum number that they ever got to was. Yeah.
in QED 3, so for free Dirac formula, the fermion bilinear disorder in the fermion bilinear is positive.
Right.
And with the fluctuating gauge field, that become more, that become relevant.
Sorry, for free Dirac. Yeah, it becomes irrelevant. There's the, you're talking about, sorry, are you talking about the mass operator or are you talking about the current?
The fermion bilinear mass operator.
Yeah.
So that becomes irrelevant in the presence of gauge.
Yes.
So I'm confused how is that attractive fixed point?
Oh, no, sorry. It's in the presence of the gauge field, it becomes relevant. The anomalous dimension due to interactions makes that mass operator more relevant.
But scaling dimension of mass operator, doesn't that increase with the gauge effect?
No, for this one, it decreases.
It decreases?
Yeah, for the time reversal breaking mass, it's the other sign. For the two component psi bar psi, if you want, the mass operator has a lot. An opposite anomalous dimension. For this guy, it's flipped. Yeah.
There's one operator there.
Sorry?
There's one operator whose scaling dimension decreases.
Yeah, this operator's scaling dimension decreases. Yeah. It's kind of funny because usually we think about the two component psi bar psi, and that one gets scaling dimension that increases.
And the second question is in 3 plus 1D, say just free Dirac formula,
right.
Say disorder in the mass, perturbatively, disorder is irrelevant.
Yeah.
I think that there are numerical simulations that suggest actually it flows to diffusive limit.
Right.
Due to maybe non-perturbative.
Yeah.
So do you have some comments on maybe in the presence of gauge field?
For 3 plus 1.
So even when disorder is strongly irrelevant,
right.
Somehow
non-perturbative effects are setting in. From a perturbative perspective, as you already said, it's really impossible to capture that physics. Whether or not the gauge field does something. So I haven't thought a huge amount about that before. Shinsei and I have talked a little bit about this, but not with gauge fields. I'm not sure. I think that because of the sort of difference in physics between the 3 plus 1D gauge field and the 2 plus 1D gauge field, you don't get this nice exchange of electric and magnetic impurities. Although you might, I don't know. It's a really good question. It's interesting to explore further. I don't have a great idea for how to tackle that, but maybe we can come up with something.
Any more questions? If not, let's take a look again.